This is Dave Glowatz. Welcome to another in a series of my interviews with Ben Jarofsky, who writes on politics and government for the Chicago Reader, and who's here with me today. Welcome to the broadcast, Ben.
Thank you, David.
Today we're talking about your article titled, How a CPS Teacher Went from Excellent to Do Not Hire in a Year. This appeared in the Chicago Reader on June 30th, 2011, and it talks about a teacher named Allison Bates who lost her teaching job at Austin Polytechnical High School, a school from which students walked out in protest over teacher firings. And let's dive in about the principal, whose name is Mr. Williams at this school. According to your article, he came from North Carolina to a CPS high school, namely Austin Polytech. And in just 1 year, you say he caused 7 teachers to lose their jobs, 3 of them for basically not following an administrative procedure. Then he took a job in the suburbs. Do you have any knowledge that CPS instructed Mr. Williams to behave in a certain way as a CPS principal?
No, I have no idea what was going on in his head. I have no idea what CPS told him. I called him and left messages, and my messages weren't returned.
Of course, I asked that question to extrapolate to CPS principals in general, because I'd argue, and I'm guessing you would agree, that this is a pattern that's been repeated throughout CPS schools.
Which pattern are you talking about?
This pattern of principals coming in and getting rid of teachers who, A, if you look at their records, they don't seem to be any good reason to get rid of them, and B, they get rid of them on a technicality.
In fact, we wrote about this last year, that a new weapon was added in the arsenal to get rid of teachers. And that weapon, of course, was redefinition, which we wrote about last year, 2010, when it was first implemented. And that's where an administrator, the principal, redefines a position so that the current position holder, the current teacher, whether she or he has tenure or not, is no longer eligible for it. And that enables the principal to get that current teacher off the payroll.
But Mr. Williams didn't use that.
No, well, you don't need to use redefinition if it's a probationary teacher without tenure rights. So what I'm saying is that there are at least 2 new weapons that the Chicago Public Schools have given principals to get rid of teachers.
I'm wondering whether you've heard from, you know, your sources that principals are being instructed. You know, granted, those weapons are there, weapons as you call them, but why would they be using them?
I've not heard that principals have been instructed. The few principals I talked to have told me, this is going back to the last story we wrote, that, you know, these new techniques or whatever you want to call them were explained to them. But I never heard a principal say, oh, yes. And they said, get rid of these teachers. I think in general, there's a movement toward getting rid of teachers and making teachers more vulnerable. The idea, if you put the best possible spin on it, that if teachers are a quote-unquote accountable, then they'll somehow or other work harder and produce better results with their children, as though being under incredible pressure and anxiety will somehow or other get a teacher to do a better job of taking the anxiety out of schoolwork that kids already feel. So I think it's a misplaced premise from the get-go.
I want to come back to that thanklessness or thankfulness of the teacher's job in a minute, but you've referenced a couple times the article that you and I wrote, co-wrote.
Great article.
The award-winning,
award-winning article,
September 23rd, 2011, that we did for The Reader, an article entitled Filed Away, in which we reported on this phenomenon of teachers being classified as do not hire,
right,
which you wrote about this week. As you'll recall, in that article, we told of several teachers with stories similar to Ms. Bates, and these were among over 1,000 teachers whom CPS, quote, honorably dismissed, unquote, and that happened last year. The Chicago Teachers Union sued CPS over those firings. Have you been keeping up on that lawsuit at all?
There's 2. The particular lawsuit, or it's a challenge, I think it's more accurate to call it a challenge, regarding do not hire. There's a procedure that the union has to follow in terms of challenging the do not hire designation, and that procedure is to take it through a body called the Illinois Education Labor Relations Board. And then once that board renders a decision, that decision can be appealed by either side to the court. So it's a long, drawn-out, laborious process, and the union has engaged that. I think the do not hire designation is absolutely pernicious. I think it's unfair, it's unjust, it's unwarranted. I can't see it having any benefit whatsoever to the school children of Chicago. I think it's an example of overreach by the central office, and I think the central office should back off and just withdraw it on their own and pretend as though it's, you know, a legacy left over from a previous administration, which is generally how they do things when they don't want to own up to it. But there are stubborn bunch. And there's also in the air this sort of vindictiveness, this sort of hostility to public school teachers, this notion, this canard that somehow or other public school teachers are the ones accountable or responsible for the relatively poor test score results of many kids, particularly low-income kids. And I just saw, read about it in today's New York Times. There was a column by a gentleman named David Brooks, who's articulating this point of view. It's like, poverty doesn't matter. It's the teachers. If they worked harder, if they were better, if we had better teachers, we could do it, which is kind of funny. I mean, how are you going to get, quote unquote, better teachers, whatever that means? How are you define it? How are you going to get better teachers to come to Chicago if you have things like the do not hire list, if you have things like redefinition, if you have principals who are completely free just to fire people at will and then actually put them on a do not hire list so they can never work again? I don't see how you can possibly convince yourself that you're going to recruit people to come to work in such an environment, particularly as you're cutting pay and increasing hours. It's the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard. In some ways, writing about this now, Dave, reminds me of writing about TIFFs 5 years ago, where I'm confronting something that's just, to me, ludicrous. It doesn't make any sense at all. And all the explanations that the powers that be give only point out how senseless it is. So I guess my role is just to keep pounding away until they say uncle.
As some have said with TIFFs. You mentioned teacher pay, and as many of our listeners know, the Chicago Board of Education recently denied the Chicago Teachers Union its contractual 4% raise for this year, citing budget constraints. I was talking with a friend visiting from out of town recently who noted press reports that Chicago public school teachers were shown to have salaries among the highest of big city public school systems in the country. And I countered that if you look at the state of Illinois, actually it's the reverse, that compared to school districts, public school district within Illinois, they're towards the bottom. So in this discussion of what is the proper amount to pay Chicago public school teachers, which of those perspectives makes more sense?
There's so many issues embedded in what you said. First of all, starting with taking away the 4%, that gets into the whole issue of budget honesty in the city of Chicago, which I know is not what you're asking, but that's like the heart of that whole 4% thing. In terms of how much teachers should get paid, that's a serious question that nobody has really addressed. And that gets into the issue of, well, how important are teachers? How valuable are they? I mean, if it was a pure market, just like an unfettered market, we value teachers the way we value movie stars, or we value teachers the way we value basketball players, then their salaries would rise as they got better and better at what they did. But in reality, there is not a strong market for great teachers. There is not a strong market demand for the kids who are doing the worst to do better. I think it's just rhetoric. And so, absent of that strong market, I don't see how we're ever going to pay teachers the amount of money they deserve for the important job that they have. And so we have just the opposite. We have a movement to pay them less. So I would say, ultimately, that the teachers in the inner city who are facing the greatest challenge should get paid the most because they're having the greatest challenge. But of course, that is not the way it is, as your statistics show out. Teachers in the suburbs who have relatively easier job or don't have nearly as much pressure on them get paid more money. And so the market, the very market that many of these advocates of charter schools and free market enterprise supposedly espouse, that very market is encouraging teachers to leave the inner city, to leave Chicago.
Like our principal in the story, Mr. Williams.
Like our principal in the story. I'm sure he's getting more money in the suburbs than he would have gotten in Chicago. So I feel as though there's no real honest discussion about all these various issues at hand. So I would say that if we really believe it's so important to have the lowest achieving students in our country who are generally in poor neighborhoods, if that's our number one goal, to have them achieve at a higher level, then we should pay the teachers who teach them a higher wage.
We'll leave it there. Ben Jarofsky of the Chicago Reader, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, sir.
This is Dave Glowatz. You've been listening to my interview with Ben Jarofsky. When you get a chance, check back at MrRadio.org for other interviews or subscribe to our podcast. Thanks for listening.